It's a legal firm with partners who don't exactly get along. And in the tradition, I suppose, early in the tradition of what is now called the retreat, the company retreat, they all retire to an island to do some duck hunting, at least, ostensibly. There are some problems, however. Dave can't swim. Lydia has a bigger problem than that. There's a shooting, and perhaps in addition to that, a murder, and a canoe. It all adds up to the Four Fatal Jugglers and Mole Mystery Theater from June 26, 1944.
And now the Mole Mystery Theater, presented by M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin.
Jeffrey Barnes, welcoming you to the Mole Mystery Theater, the program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. Tonight's story by Paul Monash, entitled The Four Fatal Jugglers and starring Alan Hewitt, has its own peculiar prescription for mystery. The ingredients? Well, take four people, mix them together lightly in an isolated place, add a dash or two of mutual hatred, let them juggle that hatred back and forth until it erupts into murder, and you have the four fatal jugglers.
Well, Mr. Barnes, setting the stage for murder. Four fatal jugglers. That makes me shiver to think of it. Just as I shiver a bit to think of a fellow all set to shave tough whiskers or a tender skin without Mole. Yes, when you start juggling that razor in the morning, you want Mole. Because it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole. The heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin. Try it. Mole. And now for tonight's Mole mystery, The Four Fatal Jugglers, starring Alan Hewitt.
Dave, say, I'd like to have a talk with you. Got a moment to spare?
Why, yes, I guess so. What's up?
Step into my office. I've got something to show you.
Okay, be right in.
Well, what's on your mind, Gordon?
Ah, come on in. Close the door. Take a look at what I've got for you.
Well, what do you know? The papers for the Mendoza and Brown cases.
That's it, Dave. I worked on this day and night, and now we're ready to take it into court. That's where your job begins. The courtroom, the press, the admirers, the glory.
Oh, you're not going to start in on that again, are you, Gordon?
Start in on what?
An old song and dance about me getting all the glory in this partnership. Me being Dave Copeland, brilliant young attorney. While you, oh, those tears when you think of it. You sitting here in your office, working, working, working. The brains behind the mouthpiece.
My boy, something's eating you. You were born with a handsome face, a quick tongue, and a well-developed larynx. I have other gifts. Good Lord, Dave, what's wrong with you?
Well, nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, then stop looking at me as if you hate me.
I hate you? Why do you always insist on twisting things around?
Listen, Dave, we've been partners for 10 years. I like you, and I flatter myself that you like me. It's just that, well, we've both had problems. With me, it's been Lydia.
Yes, I know that.
She's been insisting on a divorce. She says she's in love with someone else. It's cruel. It hurts to hear someone you're mad about say that.
Yeah, sure, I know.
And, Dave, I've got a confession to make.
Confession?
About 6 months ago, when Lydia first began to talk divorce, I hired a detective.
Huh?
What's the matter, Dave?
Well, nothing's the matter.
Well, I thought... Well, here's the confession, Dave, and it's a nasty one. That detective told me you were the man Lydia was in love with.
Me?
Oh, I knew it was impossible. You're married. You have a wonderful wife, a great boy. You're not the kind of a guy who would do his friend dirt. When the detective told me, my first reaction... never mind that, Dave. It's all water under the bridge.
What do you mean, water under the bridge? If you suspect me of having anything to do with Lydia...
I just told you, I don't think anything of the kind. Oh, Lydia's attractive and all that, but you're my friend, Dave. You're my partner. Oh, look, how about a drink?
No. No, thanks, not now.
Look, Dave.
I'm looking.
Are we friends?
Of course we are.
Then friends quarrel, but essentially friends agree. We've been close for a long time, Dave, and I want us to stay that way. So, look, here's an idea. You know my place on the lake?
I've heard you talk about it.
I'm going up there this afternoon for the weekend. Lydia's got things to do in town, and I thought it'd be a good idea for you to come along.
Well,
Think of it, an island right smack in the middle of the lake. Complete isolation. The ducks will be flying over this time of year. We can bring them down in dozens.
But I don't have any stuff here I can take up.
Oh, you go home now, and I'll drive by and pick you up in, say, 2 hours at 5. How's that?
Well, you don't even give a guy time.
We can be up there by 7:30, cook ourselves a nice dinner. Ah, the life.
Well, I guess I might as well.
Ah, that's a boy, Dave. You'll love it. I give you my word. You'll never want to get off the island. Penrose, your brother-in-law.
What do you want?
I want to have a talk with you, Bob. Good long talk.
Well, if it's got anything to do with my sister wanting a divorce, you can save your breath. I'm back of her 100%. And what's
you haven't heard my side of the story, Bob, if you'd only listen.
Listen? Yeah, I'll listen. I'll listen to your lie about what you did with the money in Lydia's trust fund.
What do you mean?
I've been checking into your handling of that account. Or I should say your mishandling. Well, you're nothing better than a common thief. And I'm going to see that they put you away like
that. Bob, please. There's a lot to explain, more than I can say over the phone. Look, Bob, I've got a suggestion to make.
Go ahead.
I want you to come up to my place on the island this weekend.
This weekend?
My partner, Dave Copeland.
Oh, him.
Yeah, he's going to be there, but he won't be in the way for long.
Why don't we just get together in town?
Oh, this way we can do some other things. A little hunting, for instance.
Hunting? For what?
Well, for ducks, ostensibly.
Ostensibly?
Did I say ostensibly? I meant obviously. Obviously.
Who's that?
Your beloved husband. You remember, Lydia, the man you sometimes see coming and going in your apartment, or at least one of the men.
Ha ha, very funny, Gordon. Just what are you doing home now?
Just want to give you the good news that I'll be away this weekend.
Oh, I'm on the verge of tears.
Yeah, I thought you would be. I'm not deserting you, however. I'm just going up to the island for the weekend with a couple of people you know.
Who?
Interested? Well, one of them is your dear brother, Bob. And the other, no one other than... say, what rhymes with other... lover, yes, lover.
What's all this nonsense?
Oh, nothing. I was just going to mention that I'm also taking up Dave Copeland.
Dave?
He's never been up there, has he?
Well, you and your filthy mind.
Our trained legal mind, my dear. Oh, we're going to have a cozy time, all three of us, sitting around the fire, going out hunting.
Hunting?
Certainly, ducks, things like that.
Oh, no. No, I know.
Well, Lydia, you don't think... Oh, Lydia, no, how could you?
Why, you... I know what you're up to.
You don't even I'm your own husband.
Why, you horrible person.
How could you? How could you?
This is Lydia.
Yes, I know.
I've just spoken to Gordon.
Oh, my dear partner.
He told me you're going up to the island with him.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, Dave, you mustn't go. You can't go up there with him.
Why shouldn't I go?
Because he hates you.
And I hate him, too, so what?
Oh, Dave, I can't.
Now, just a second, Lydia. I've told you before, our little affair is over. I can't have you interfering in everything I do.
Dave.
I'm sorry, Lydia, but, well, you know, I've got a family to think of. Now, forget it. I'll be okay.
You idiot. He once told me that if he ever wanted to commit a murder, a hunting accident...
would be the way he'd do it. Now, just calm yourself, Lydia. Think this thing through.
Think it through?
Yes. Hunting. You know, a thing like that can work both ways. Can't it?
coming?
Lydia, what in the world...
Bob, I had to come.
I'll come in, sis. Oh. Now what's up?
Gordon just told me you're going up to the island with him.
Yeah, that's right. And, Dave Copeland's coming along, too. I'm expecting them any minute.
Bob, you can't. You can't let them
Look,
go.
Look, sis, I want to ask you something.
Yes?
About Dave Copeland. I know you're in love with him.
Well,
I get around and hear things. But I also heard something else which disturbs me.
What?
I heard that Dave Copeland has been just kidding you along.
It's a lie.
I heard it from someone I trust.
I don't care where you heard it. It's not true.
I hope you're right, because you're my sister, and the way I feel right now...
Please, Bob. Let's not talk about it.
Well, then it is true.
No, no. Oh, I don't care what's true or what isn't true. Just don't let them go there.
Don't let them go? Why not?
Because Gordon, he wants to use hunting as an excuse, a blind, to kill someone.
I thought he made that quite evident. Why, he might even want to kill me.
You?
But don't worry about me. That thing, hunting, it works both ways.
That's what he said.
He? Who, Gordon?
No, yes. Oh, Lord, please, I'm so confused. Just promise me you won't go. That you'll stop Dave from going.
Nonsense, Lydia. I wouldn't do that for anything. After all, a chance like this comes only once in a lifetime.
And so, mystery fans, that was Act One of The Four Fatal Jugglers. Oh, I can think of pleasanter situations than being on that island with three potential killers.
I'll say, and so can I, Mr. Barnes, a pleasant shave with Mole. Now, that's the situation that I want listeners to arrange for themselves. Because Mole is the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin. Because Mole is heavier, it not only softens your whiskers, it stands them up straight while your razor cuts them off close and clean. With Mole, you shave faster, closer, easier, and you shave painlessly. Try it. See if you don't say it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin.
And now this is Jeffrey Barnes returning you to Act Two of The Four Fatal Jugglers.
Drive up to the island, isn't it? Wonderful scenery.
Yeah, what you can see of it. Why don't you slow down, Gordon?
I'm not going so fast. A little over 60, that's all. I generally get it up around 65 or 70 along here.
Crying out loud, Gordon, what's eating you? You're taking these curves on two wheels.
You always want to give it the gas going around curves, get better traction that way.
Never mind that. Slow it down, will you?
Yeah, this is getting me nervous.
We want to get there by dark. I hate to drive after dark.
Keep this up and you won't have a chance to...
Come on, Gordon, have a heart. Take it easy.
My nerves are getting shot. Slow down, will you, before you get us all killed?
Get you killed? You, Bob, my own brother-in-law, and Dave, my partner and best friend in the world? Now, why would I want to do a thing like that? Well, this is it. We made it in good time.
It's a miracle.
That's the landing. See the island out there? That's it. Only 100 yards out, but really isolated. Here you are, boys. This way, down the path here.
Oh, is that how we get out to the island? In that rowboat?
No, not exactly, Dave. We use the canoe. The rowboat belongs to some other people.
I can't go in a canoe.
Why not?
Well, you know I can't swim. Those things can go over.
Dave, you know I'm a good swimmer. Just sit in the middle of the boat and nothing will happen. Am I right, Bob?
I guess so, but I...
And even if it does go over, I can rescue you. Can't I? Why don't you guys get settled now? You can bunk in there, and I'll take the cot out here.
You're not going to be comfortable on that.
Ah, sure I am. I even sleep on the floor sometimes. I like to rough it. How about you, Bob? Think you'll like it here?
Yeah, it looks all right.
Well, go on. You guys stow away your stuff, and I'll fix up something to eat.
Something to eat?
Well, sure. We got to eat, don't we? I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse. How about you, Dave?
I could eat, I guess. But, say, Gordon, let me rustle up the grub, huh?
No, Dave. Let's make that my job. What do you say?
You guys haven't ever had any of my cooking. I'll make you some grub that you'll never forget.
Gordon, I'm the best bachelor cook you ever saw. Just let me handle that skillet.
Now, Bob. I've had 10 years watching my wife in the kitchen. I'd like to see what I learned.
Dave. No experimenting on us. I'm the host. It's only fair that I should labor over this hot kerosene stove. Boy, you guys are really casting a horrible reflection on my cooking. The way you act, one would think you're afraid you couldn't survive it.
Dave.
Yeah?
Come on outside a minute, will you?
What for?
I want to talk to you. Come on.
Okay, bud. I think I know what's on your mind.
You think so?
Yes. You want to form a defensive alliance against Gordon. You feel the way I do that Gordon has some purpose in bringing us up here. I don't know what he has against me. He's a strange guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you're Lydia's brother, and perhaps he blames you for the divorce.
Oh, sure. If he doesn't blame you, that is.
What do you mean?
Skip it, Dave. I know you've been going around with my sister.
Why?
I don't bother to deny it. The only thing I want to know is, what are you going to do about it?
Do about it? What do you expect me to do?
She's getting a divorce. She's setting herself free. What about you?
Now, listen, Bob. I don't see where this is any of your business.
I'm aware of all that. But I'm a few years older than Lydia. And I've been taking care of my sister for quite some time. She's giving up a lot because she thinks she loves you. What about you?
I don't have to discuss this with you.
All right. I think you made yourself clear. I'm going to turn in soon. I'd like to be kind of fresh and steady when we go hunting tomorrow. Good night, Dave.
Bob, wait a second.
Skip it.
Bob. Oh, the devil with him.
Dave.
Huh?
Dave.
Who's that? Lydia. Good Lord.
I had to come, Dave. I had to stop you.
Stop me?
From getting killed. I rented a car and drove up here. There was a rowboat at the landing.
Well, you just take that rowboat and get off this island.
Dave, no, I can't. I won't go unless you come with me. And if you love me...
I don't love you.
Dave.
I thought I made that pretty clear.
I've been a fool, haven't I? You were just a little bored with your marriage.
So were you. And so we got together. But, good Lord, why does it have to be blown up into some great Shakespearean tragedy? Why can't we just let the whole thing be finished? Over.
Because I'm in love with you, Dave. Or I was.
Well, that's fine. You were, now you're not. Why don't we just be friends? Surely we've got the basis of a friendship.
Friendship? You think I would ever like you?
Lydia.
No, you just don't understand, do you?
Please, forget it, can't you?
No, I can't. You don't know me, you never have, because you're always so concerned with yourself. No, Dave. No. I'm going to make you as unhappy as you're making me at this moment.
Great Scott, keep it down.
I'm going to make you pay for this.
You sound like something out of a cheap novel.
Cheap? I'm going to make you look cheap. I'm going to make you so miserable you'll wish that... Gordon.
Don't stop on my account. Go on. I like to hear lovers quarrel. Go on, tell him the rest. Tell him you'll make him wish he'd never been born.
Gordon, listen.
Shut up, you. My friend. Go on, dear wife. Finish your farewell address. You mustn't let me interrupt you. I never have till now.
Oh, Lord, how I hate men. All of you.
Oh, now, let's not go to extremes. There are good and bad in every sex, I always say.
You've certainly got a peculiar sense of humor.
Hey, what the devil is... Lydia, what in the name of...
Your sister decided to pay us a little visit. Very thoughtful of her.
Lydia, I don't know why you've come here. But go back to the city now, do you hear?
Oh, yes, I hear. But I'm not going.
And quite right you are, my dear. We'll put you up in the bunk room, and Bob and Dave and I can sleep in the main room. Your being here with us could enliven what might possibly, but not probably, have been a dull weekend. Oh, yes, Lydia. Now that I think of it, I'm very glad you came.
wake up. Come on, come on. Get up.
Oh.
Yeah. It's 5 o'clock. Come on, Dave. Oh, let me sleep. It's too cold.
Oh, I'm sleepy.
You'll feel better in a few minutes. You want to bag a few ducks, don't you?
Okay.
Come on, Bob. Off and on them.
Well, I'm stiff as a board.
Well, we got a fine, exciting day ahead of us. You don't want to miss any of it.
That's right, I don't. What time is it?
5 o'clock.
Oh, no. I'm going to get Lydia up.
What for?
I want to get her out of here.
Oh, you can do that when we come back from hunting.
No, I want to get her out of here right now. Lydia? Lydia?
Better let her sleep. She must be all knocked out. Let her sleep.
Oh, no. Lydia, it's time to get... Lydia?
This is Jeffrey Barnes again. In just a moment, we'll bring you Act 3 of The Four Fatal Jugglers. Now, a word from George Putnam.
One thing to remember about the most common type of dandruff is that many outstanding authorities say it is not a natural condition, but actually is caused by a germ called Pityrosporum ovale. Now, the only way you can get real relief is to destroy this germ. And simply washing or brushing away loose dandruff won't do it. But double dandrine will. Yes, double dandrine really works because it gets at the cause of this dandruff and kills it. Actually kills the germ on contact. Results with double dandrine have been remarkable even in many stubborn cases. And the thing that makes double dandrine so amazingly effective is a special ingredient, an active antiseptic that's so wonderfully efficient, many hospitals use it. In double dandrine, we call it Alzam. So stop trying to combat this dandruff with ineffective methods that actually are no better than plain water. Use double dandrine and destroy the cause. Get double dandrine tomorrow. Your money back if not satisfied.
She's dead. My sister. Oh, God.
The knife. Right through her back.
She must have been sleeping.
You ought to know, Gordon.
What do you mean by that, Dave?
That's your knife, isn't it?
Of course it's my knife, but don't be absurd. I didn't kill her. Bob, you don't think I killed her?
Well, Gordon, didn't you?
No, I swear it. Why should I?
Why?
All right. I know what you're both thinking.
No, you don't, Gordon.
I'm going for the police. You stay here with her. I'll go across the lake.
No, you won't. You think we're going to let you make a getaway, Gordon?
I'm not trying to make a getaway, Dave. One of the two of you killed her.
Just stay where you are.
Where the devil did you get that revolver?
I brought it up with me, just in case.
You're not going to keep me here, Dave. Not a victim to your tender mercies. I'm going for the police. If you want to come with me, fine. If not, stay here.
You know I can't swim. You know I can't go in that canoe with you.
There's the rowboat. Come on, if you want.
Gordon, I warn you, don't take another step.
Oh, don't be melodramatic.
All right, Gordon, you asked for it.
Gordon? Gordon? Dave, you killed him.
Bob, you saw he was trying to get away.
Yeah, I saw. We better get out of here, off this island. We'll have to go to the police.
You'll back me up.
Dave, put the gun away, huh?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. But, Bob, you will tell them just what happened.
Yeah, you can depend on me. I'll let them know everything.
Well, that's funny. Lydia must have taken the rowboat to get here, but it's gone.
Well, she might have had someone row her. Oh, no, there it is.
Where?
Floating out there. See it near the other shore? Must have gotten loose.
Well, she probably didn't tie it tightly. Poor Lydia.
Yeah, poor Lydia. Well, we'll have to use the canoe.
Couldn't you swim out and get the rowboat?
And waste all that time? You just get up in front, in the bow, and sit steady. We'll be okay.
Well, All right.
Okay.
Okay. Push off. Bob, I had to shoot him. You know that.
Of course you had to. I'd have done the same thing if I'd been you.
Sure you would. He was getting away.
Call the police.
Yes, that's what he said. Could you imagine him calling the police after...
After what?
After he killed her.
But he didn't kill her.
What?
I said he didn't kill her.
But then... Then that means you did.
Oh, no. It means you did.
You're kidding, aren't you?
Would I kid about my sister's murder? No, you got up in the middle of the night while we were sleeping. It was easy to take Gordon's knife. Oh. I see you still have the revolver.
Yes. And I wouldn't miss at about 8 feet.
Funny, you hold it in your left hand.
So what? I'm left-handed. It's a silly thing to be talking about at a time like this.
Not so silly. You see, if you'll consider the position of my sister's bed in that room and the direction of the stab wound, you'd know that she was stabbed by a left-handed man.
Very neat. And you figured it out all by yourself. Only you're not going to be able to tell anyone else.
You're not going to shoot me.
You think not, huh?
No, you can't. Because if you shoot me, I'll topple over. I'll capsize the canoe, and you can't swim, Dave. You can't swim, and you don't want to drown. That's a pretty horrible way of dying. So now give me the gun. Just throw it on the bottom. I'm going to rock the canoe, Dave. A little more each time, and if you don't throw the gun by the time I count five, I'm going to turn it over. One.
Cut it out.
Two. A little harder, Dave.
Bob, you're wrong.
Three. It's going to go, Dave. You're going to be drowned.
Billy's sake, stop it.
Four. This is it, Dave. Throw me the gun. Throw me the gun. Here, take it. That's it, Dave. That's showing good sense. Now, a few more strokes, and we'll be on the beach.
Bob, listen.
Shut up. All right, get out.
Huh?
Go on, get out.
Look, Bob. You've got to take my
Just
word.
Just keep quiet. I'm not interested. You know, you had me scared out there.
Scared?
I thought I'd never live to see you burn for killing Lydia and Gordon. But I bluffed you, Dave.
Bluffed me?
When I rocked the canoe. You see, I don't know how to swim either.
This is Jeffrey Barnes again, bringing down the final curtain on tonight's Mystery Theater presentation of Paul Monash's The Four Fatal Jugglers. Be with us next week to hear a story entitled Check Number B-131.
One of those company retreats that didn't work out so well. That was The Four Fatal Jugglers, a story from the Mole Mystery Theater, from June 26, 1944. We're going to crack a book, the sealed book, right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Aunt Agatha is one of those people who denies the presence of ghosts. But her nephew, who has a certain agenda and is in a hurry to accomplish it, wants her to get other ideas. In this story called The Ghost Maker, it comes from the sealed book from June 10th, 1945.
The Sealed Book. Thank you. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds, strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of two scoundrels who would stop at nothing for money. A tale called The Ghost Makers. Tale, The Ghost Makers, as it is written in the pages of the sealed book. It is an autumn afternoon in the ancient New England village of Wilton. In an old stone house a mile from the town, Agatha Wainwright is serving tea to her nephew Ned, and a little man Ned is introduced as Professor Piedmont, a friend who has come to spend a few weeks with them while he works on a book to be called Old Graveyards of New England.
So this is your graveyard, friend Ned. He looks like a man who'd be happy staring at tombstones.
They make a fascinating study, Miss Wainwright.
Well, I'll take your word for it, Professor Piedmont. For myself, I'd rather read about them in a book.
The professor not only writes books, Auntie, but he's also an expert on psychic phenomena.
Psychic phenomena, eh? Oh, you mean ghosts. Foolish fiddle-faddle, dreamed up by silly people without the brains to know better.
Ah, but Miss Wainwright, I assure you, you are wrong.
Oh, nonsense. When a person's dead, he's dead. And I see anything I'm willing to call a ghost, I'll know I'm crazy and I'll admit it.
Why, Auntie, this very house is supposed to be haunted. You know that.
Oh, rubbish. This is a perfectly normal house. I've lived here a month and I haven't heard so much as a board squeak.
Ah, but Miss Wainwright, that may be only because you're new to the house and not yet sensitized. It takes time to become aware of occult influences.
Oh, stuff and nonsense. Who started all this talk about ghosts, anyway? Here, now let's have some tea, and no more talk about ghosts.
Well, Ned, now that we're alone, suppose you tell me a little more than you put in your letter. I'm still not sure why you sent for me.
All right, Professor. This is the gist of it. 3 months ago, Aunt Agatha's brother died, leaving her an estate of $400,000. And I'm Auntie's only living relative.
I see. Yes, light begins to dawn.
No, wait. My uncle arranged his will so that Aunt Agatha gets only the interest, about $20,000 a year, and this house to live in. On her death, the entire estate goes to charity. I'm cut off without a penny.
I see your uncle didn't like you, Ned. A shrewd man. Very shrewd.
Yes, he was making sure I couldn't get my hands on any of it. But that's where you come in.
Hmm?
If Aunt Agatha were to become, shall we say, ill, mentally ill...
So that she was incompetent to administer the estate, you mean?
Exactly. If Aunt Agatha were to lose her mind through shock or fright... Who but me, her only relative, would be the logical one to administer the estate for her?
You would, then. Then you'd have the whole income for as long as she lived.
Yes, and part of the principal, too. I know ways to manage it. But I've got to get my hands on some of it before the end of the year, or I'm sunk. I owe a little money, about $25,000. If I don't get it quickly, well, the people I owe it to are rather short-tempered.
I understand. Yes, Ned, I remember when I knew you in Chicago. You liked to gamble, didn't you? But that's your affair. Personally, I prefer to stick to my own profession, creating ghosts.
Yes, I've heard of some of your jobs, Professor, and some of the ghosts you've created to order.
Yes, I pride myself on having a unique occupation, Ned. I believe I'm the only ghost maker there is. And the ghosts I've created have been effective, too.
So I understand. Now, what I want you to do is this. I want Auntie frightened to the point
where... Yes, I understand. Well, Ned, it's going to be difficult. She's a tough-minded woman. Hard to scare. Hard to drive insane.
It's got to be done. Got to get my hands on the estate. If you succeed, Professor, there's $5,000 in it for you.
Hmm? All right, Ned. I'll try. It won't be easy. But she may crack suddenly when the time comes. That type does, you know.
Good. That's settled, then. You brought everything you're apt to need?
All my apparatus and gadgets are in my trunk. They'll be here tomorrow. I'm not altogether sure I like this job, Ned.
I hope you're not going to turn moral on me, Professor.
No. There's something about this place that disturbs me, though. You know, I am psychic at times. Not altogether a faker.
Next, you'll be scaring yourself with your own stories.
As we were driving past that old cemetery this afternoon, I suddenly felt a premonition and a chill. The kind of chill you're supposed to feel when you go near the place you'll someday be buried.
Oh, it was just the wind. We'll have to get you some red flannels. Here. Here's something that'll give you your courage back. Drink it down.
Yeah, that does me good. Of all the different kinds of spirits, I prefer those in bottles.
I thought you'd like it. Now let's go downstairs again. We won't talk about ghosts anymore tonight. But tomorrow night, who knows what may come knocking at Aunt Agatha's door.
And now to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. The following evening, Ned and the professor joined Aunt Agatha by the fireplace, where she sat knitting. Outside, a cold winter wind blew.
Oh, listen to that wind. We may be in for a storm.
We're in for an early winter, that's what. The first snow will fall any day now.
It's good to have a fireplace to sit by when the wind blows like that.
Here's the cider and donuts, ma'am.
Very well, Emmy. Bring it right in.
Ah, cider and donuts. Just what we need on a night like this.
Will you have a glass, Mr. Ned?
Oh, yes, thank you, Emmy.
Did you have some cider, Professor Piedmont?
Professor, Emmy's trying to give you some cider.
Excuse me, I was listening. Thought I heard someone knocking on the front door.
Someone knocking?
Well, there is someone there.
Well, they can't be very anxious to get in, if that's all the noise they can make.
Shall I go see who it is, Miss Agatha?
Yes, girl, go see, though I can't imagine who'd be calling at this hour of the night.
Sounded like someone who didn't expect to get in anyway. A timid child, or maybe a ghost.
Yes? Yes, who is it? Miss Agatha!
Well?
There wasn't anyone there.
No one there? Of course there was. Someone knocked, didn't they?
But I opened the door and there wasn't anyone there.
Then who was knocking? Answer me that.
I don't know. But it wasn't anyone you can see.
Emmy, I'll stand for no foolishness now.
No, ma'am. But just the same, there's nobody at the door.
Someone's playing tricks on us, and I'm going to see who it is.
I'll come with you.
You won't find anybody there.
Well, we'll see. Well, what is it? What do you...
There isn't anyone here.
No, but there was. They slipped away into the bushes. That's what they did.
Yes, of course. Some small boys playing tricks, I suppose.
If I catch them, I'll tan their hides.
Who was it, Miss Wainwright?
Just some boys playing tricks, Professor. That's all it could have been. Come on, Professor. Drink your cider.
What? Oh, yes, of course. Well,
Professor, you look like a man who was listening to something then. What was it?
No, I assure you. I'm
too old not to know when a man is lying, Professor Piedmont. What were you listening to?
To tell the truth, I thought I heard voices.
What kind of voices?
Far away voices, crying something I couldn't make out. I bet it was just the flames in the fireplace. I'm sure it was.
Of course, that's all it was. Well, what do you say we all turn in? This New England air makes me sleepy.
Knocks at the door when there's nobody there. Voices. Yes, it's high time we were all in bed instead of sitting around here imagining such nonsensical things.
Highly pleased with their first effort in creating ghosts that didn't exist, Ned and Professor Piedmont went to bed. But before they retired, they held a brief, low-voiced conference in Ned's room.
Well, Professor, that door-knocking act was all right. You did it very nicely.
Yes, Ned. An ordinary length of black thread run through a crack in the window sash and attached to the door-knocker can create a very satisfactory ghost indeed.
Now tell me, what comes next on the program?
Well, we can't work too fast. Tomorrow, the hired girl, Emmy, will spread the story of tonight's happenings. The whole town will start talking about it.
Good. And then?
And tomorrow night, nothing happens. Aunt Emmy is reassured. But tomorrow, I'll be busy. I noticed today there's an old hollow tree in the woods about 100 feet from the house.
What about it?
I'll run wires to it, hiding them under the leaves, and install a small loudspeaker in it. I'll conceal the microphone and batteries behind the drapes in the living room.
I see. So 2 nights from now, we'll hear ghostly voices, eh?
Exactly. They'll accompany the ghostly knocks on the door. But that won't be all. There'll be other surprises on the program.
Professor, remind me to tell you sometime that you're about as unpleasant an old rascal as I've ever met.
The next evening, Agatha Wainwright listened nervously for a repetition of the ghostly knocks. But nothing happened, and she regained her composure. The evening following that, however, as she and Ned and the professor sat in the living room around the fire...
9 o'clock. The evening may just be starting in New York, but here in Wilton it's bedtime. Seems to be someone at the door.
So there is.
Shall I go?
No, Emmy can answer the door. She does little enough to earn her money. Emmy? Emmy?
Yes, Miss Agatha?
There's someone at the door. See who it is, please.
Must I, Miss Agatha?
Must you, indeed. Answer the door, Emmy.
I'd rather not, ma'am.
Emmy, see who is at the door.
Yes, Miss Agatha. I'm going. Who is it? There's no one there. There's no one there again.
Emmy, get control of yourself.
But I tell you, there's no one there.
Then it's someone playing tricks. That's all you hear, Emmy.
Yes.
Yes, Miss Agatha, I hear. But I don't believe it.
Go to your room.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, Miss Agatha, but there wasn't anyone there.
I hope I'm not going to have to discharge that girl.
Shall I go this time, Auntie?
No, Ned. Let the rascals play their tricks, whoever they are. They'll soon stop when they see we pay no attention.
I wonder if I could see them from the window.
Maybe we could trap them if we were to go quietly out the back door and slip around to the front.
What was that? Someone calling.
Really? I don't hear anyone.
It's someone calling to us to let him in.
Strange. I can't hear it.
Oh, you must have heard it, Ned. It was perfectly plain.
There are some voices certain people can hear and others can't. If there's someone calling, we better take a look.
Come on, Addie. We'll see what goes on. Who's there? Show yourself, whoever you are.
Yeah, it's perfectly empty.
No. There isn't a soul in sight.
Both the knocking and the voices seem to have stopped.
Perhaps we ought to search the yard and... And Agatha, look.
Huh?
Gone at the edge of the trees.
Lights. Three balls of light moving around just above the ground.
Really? Three spheres of light? Dear me, luminous spheres are common manifestations of spiritual presences.
Oh, nonsense. They're just two will-o'-the-wisps, that's all. Well,
whatever they are, we're going to see. Come on, Professor. If it's a trick, we'll soon know.
Yes, Ned. Wait for me. Don't scare them away. I want to see what they look like.
Ned! Ned, they're rising. They're floating away above the trees.
Aunt Agatha! Annie, are you all right? Shall I get a doctor for you?
I want for the doctor? I'm all right. I'm an old fool carrying on like that. Just because of some will-o'-the-wisps or whatever it was. I shan't do it again, I promise you.
You need not be ashamed, Miss Wainwright. Unless I'm much mistaken, we've witnessed a psychic visitation of a kind unsurpassed in my experience.
No stuff and nonsense, Professor. You may believe in spirits, but I don't. I never have believed in ghosts, and I'm not going to start now. It was just that it was, well, unexpected.
In the days that followed, Ned Wainwright and Professor Piedmont found it impossible to shake Agatha Wainwright's iron nerves. Emmy, the hired girl, resigned in terror, but Agatha remained seemingly unmoved. Resolutely, she ignored the ghostly knocks, voices, and footsteps that Professor Piedmont's ingenuity devised. The whole town buzzed with tales of her haunted house, but she refused to pay any attention to them. After a month had gone by, Ned was ready to admit defeat.
Well, Professor, you're a washout. Aunt Agatha hasn't turned a hair at your ghost.
No, Ned, I told you it might take a long time. She's a very strong-minded woman. Believe me, anyone else would have cracked by now.
Well, she hasn't, and she's not going to.
I still say it may happen all at once. She's nervous and distraught. She doesn't sleep well. Every evening she sits listening for ghostly voices, though she won't admit it. But she's made up her mind not to believe in ghosts. And I'm afraid she never will.
Well, what do you suggest? It's the middle of December. I've got to get my hands on her money by the end of the year. I'm sunk.
We must play our last card. You.
Me? What do you mean?
She's fond of you. You're her only relative.
What are you getting at?
How would she feel if you, her only relative, were to die and come back here as a ghost?
I don't follow you.
My plan is simple. We'll say goodbye to your aunt and drive off as if we were going away. Then, secretly in the night, we'll return to the house.
Yes? And then what?
We'll see to it that she receives a phone call from a friend of mine in Boston. He'll announce to your aunt that you and I have been in an automobile accident, and that we've been killed.
Oh, I see. Yes, I begin to understand.
Immediately after the phone call, we'll knock. She'll come to the door and see us standing there.
And having just heard that we're both dead...
Exactly. If that doesn't work, Ned, we are defeated. But it'll be a strong mind indeed that can withstand such a shock. A strong mind indeed.
And now to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. 2 days later, Ned and Professor Piedmont said goodbye to Agatha and drove away. It was starting to snow as they left, so they made their way by a roundabout route to an isolated roadhouse, and there they spent the day waiting. After darkness had fallen, they started back towards Aunt Agatha's house. By now, there was snow feet deep on the road, and the cold blast of the north wind made even the heated interior of the car uncomfortable.
Brr. I'll be dead when this is over, Ned. At the moment, it must be down to zero.
Yes, at least. Well, we're almost there. We'll drive up to within 100 yards of the house and wait in the car with the heater on. What time did you arrange to have that phone call made from Boston?
At 9 o'clock, exactly. We want to knock the instant after she gets it.
Right. Isn't that our turn there?
I think so. This snow makes it so hard to see that...
Professor, look out. We're going off the road.
Ned. Ned. Are you hurt?
My ankle. Help me out of here.
Come on. Hurry, Ned. I smell gasoline. The car may catch on fire.
All right. Help me onto the road.
Yes, yes.
What happened?
We skidded down a 10-foot bank and turned completely over.
Well, if you'd watched where you were going, it wouldn't have happened.
I couldn't tell. There was ice under the snow. No, but never mind that. We've got to get to shelter.
And I think my ankle's broken. Yes, I can't step on it.
Yes. You can lean on me. But where are we?
Quarter of a mile from Aunt Agatha's. There isn't another house within a mile.
Then come on, we've got to get there quick. Lean on me and help all you can. If we don't get there soon, we'll freeze to death.
Half an hour later, numb with cold and scarcely able to struggle on, Ned and Professor Piedmont staggered up to Agatha Wainwright's house. The windows all had heavy wooden shutters over them, shutters they themselves had helped Agatha put in place to keep out anything that might come knocking at the door in the night. But through the small pane of glass in the front door, light showed as they stumbled thankfully up the steps.
Thank heaven we're here. Couldn't have gone another 100 yards.
Oh, no, I'm almost frozen. We've got to get inside.
Yes. Here, help me.
All right. One more step. There. Ned, the phone call from Boston. What time is it now?
Time? It's 9. 9 o'clock exactly.
Then knock quickly. We've got to get inside before that phone call comes.
Inside, Agatha Wainwright heard the knocking, but before she could go to the door, the telephone rang and she answered it first.
Hello? Yes, this is Wilton, 317. Boston, calling long distance? Yes, I'll hold on. Just a minute. Hello? Yes, this is Miss Wainwright speaking. The Boston General Hospital. My nephew Ned. What is it? What's happened to him? Dead. An automobile accident. Both of them killed? No. Oh, no. Yes. Yes, I'm all right. Thank you for letting me know. I'll come in the morning. Dead. Killed. Oh, no. No, no, he can't be.
It's Ned. Let me in.
Ned. Ned's dead. He's been killed.
Let me in, please, Aunt Agatha. Ned. Let me in.
No. Ned's dead. Ned's dead.
Let us in.
No, you can't be Ned. Ned was killed. He's dead.
Aunt Agatha, please.
It must be Ned's ghost. The professor was right. There are ghosts. It's Ned's ghost out there.
Aunt Agatha, we're freezing to death out here. Please let us in.
No, no, you can't come in. You're a ghost. You're Ned's ghost. You can't come in. I won't let a ghost in here. I won't.
The next morning,
Ned and Professor Piedmont were found frozen to death beside the house, where they made a vain effort to pry open the heavy wooden shutters that covered the window. You see, Agatha never did let them in. She knew better than to open the door to ghosts. Before you close the great book, show us the tale we tell next time. This one? Ah, yes. Why, this is amazing. It's a tale of murder. Queer, unexpected, fiendish murder. Murder of a very different and unusual kind. A tale such as you've never heard before. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
Well, that plan didn't work so well. Literally, left out in the cold, as the relatives, attempting to fake their deaths in a car accident, actually deliver the real thing in the cold, right outside the door where Aunt Agatha is supposed to believe in ghosts. Our story was called The Ghost Maker. It came to us from The Sealed Book of June 10th, 1945. Our final tale for old-time radio drama for this Sunday night. I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you can join me next weekend from 8 to 11 by the glow of your radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.